recognize and thank Chief Judge James Holderman. He's the Chief Judge for the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, based in Chicago. And he is assisting us yesterday and today, as other district judges have done. But he, as the Chief Judge, has many extra duties, and so we're doubly appreciative of his generosity of time to come and assist our court. So thank you, Judge Holderman.
Thank you.
The list today has a total of 5 cases on it. 2 of them are being submitted without argument on the briefs later today. They are Appeal Number 06-3426, Eisinger versus Merit System Protection Board, and Appeal Number 07-3102, Bloom versus Department of the Army. On the 3 case argument list, we'll hear argument first in Appeal Number 06-1522, HIS Bio versus Yongshin. Mr. Rhodes, good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Please proceed.
May it please the court. The district court should have granted judgment in favor of CTI and dismissed HIF Bio's complaint. The basis of HIF Bio's complaint and each cause of action alleged is premised on the allegation.
I thought the issue was jurisdiction, not the merits of who should win the lawsuit.
It is jurisdiction, and that's what I'm going to get to.
So we had a remand to the state court of all the claims other than the RICO claim, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Now, wouldn't that normally be a question that we would ask ourselves, did the district judge abuse his discretion in remanding the remaining claims back to the state court?
Well, the issue here has to do with the remand order itself, which remanded the cause of action to the state court on an inventorship issue.
Yeah, I'm asking about the standard of review. I'm trying to get that straight first. And my understanding of the law is that question, remandability, is reviewed for abuse of discretion by us.
That is my understanding as well, Your Honor.
So all right. And so then you have to convince us that in remanding, the judge abused his discretion. And it's a very deferential standard, not easy to demonstrate.
Well, in remanding the case to the state court, we effectively were put out of court on an issue of substantial patent law. And unless we
appeal... We weren't put out of court. You were put into a state court on certain specific claims. The federal courts remain open in the future if there are patents issue and there's a contest about the proper inventorship of issued patents, that will be litigable in the district court at that time.
But my understanding is that under the law of preemption, the issue of inventorship is a matter of federal patent law.
Well, there can only be an issue of inventorship in the normal sense, I would think, if either there is an interference declared in the patent office, or there's an issued patent which is being attacked for improper inventorship. And we don't have either of those circumstances here, right?
And I think that's actually the crux of the problem.
Isn't that right? We don't have either of those circumstances here.
No, we do not have any issued patents at issue.
And nor do we have a declared interference.
Nor do we have a declared interference.
So then how is it that we have an inventorship issue in the normal usage of the term inventorship issue?
Because the crux of their complaint is their allegation that CTI submitted a patent application to the United States Patent and Trademark Office, and in connection with that application, we submitted declarations of inventorship
that they say are false. That may be the crux in the sense that you consider that the core, but as I read the complaint, it concerns lots more than that. They complain that opportunities to get venture capital funding and many other things like that were compromised by the usage made by Dr. Teng and his associates of various documents sent to them from Korea by Dr. Park. Obviously, I have no idea what happened or who's right or who's wrong or who owns what or whether there were confidentiality agreements implied or in fact or anything of that sort. But just on the face of it, their lawsuit seems to address as its race all these documents sent serially from Korea to Taiwan and the usage made of the recipients of those documents, not only in the patent office, but in other places as well. So you may be right that the crux has to do with the filing of the patent, but the lawsuit goes way beyond that, and it's the lawsuit, the complaint, that's being remanded.
Well, I think the problem is that they're asking the California State Court to make a determination of inventorship.
Well, it can't in the normal sense because there are no claims with respect to which to determine inventorship.
And that's the problem that I see.
Well, what about the ownership side of it? Let's put aside inventorship and say you're right about inventorship. But why isn't there a legitimate state court lawsuit with respect to the ownership of all those documents sent from Korea by Park to Tang in Taiwan?
Well, there may be an issue regarding ownership of documents.
Why doesn't that support the lawsuit regardless of whether there's an illicit inventorship issue maybe also buried somewhere in the lawsuit?
Well, my understanding is that if there's a substantial question of federal patent law, then that means that this case should be in the federal district court, not in the state.
That's my whole point. If as to ownership, there isn't any federal patent issue, there are implied contract issues, I suppose, but I don't see any federal patent, true patent issues, if we're talking about the ownership of a series of notebooks sent to Taiwan.
But that's not what they're talking about in terms of ownership. They're saying that we took their invention.
They're saying that you took the documents and their content and appropriated and misused those documents and their content in various ways, including the patent law. But it seems to me that there's a legitimate question of who's the rightful owner of the documents and their content.
But that's not what they pled in their complaint. They said that we misappropriated the invention, and the act that they pointed to was the submission of the declarations of inventorship.
Not
only,
they also pointed to communications that were made with various funding sources. That's also part of the lawsuit. So there's an ownership issue as to whether it was illicit to reconvey the information in those notebooks and other documents to lenders and capital providers.
I understand that, but as to each cause of action that they have alleged in their complaint, it's premature because in order to get to those allegations and to fully adjudicate those issues, there has to be a determination of whether or not CTI's applications named correct inventors.
Why is that? To the extent the lawsuit deals with communications to bankers of information contained in notebooks sent over to Taiwan, how does that involve any patent issue?
The only communication, public communication, that they have pled in their complaint is the communication to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. They submitted as exhibits to their complaint the declarations themselves.
There's no question that's part of the lawsuit. I'm trying to test what else is part of the lawsuit. And as I read it, they are complaining about the use made not only in the patent office, but in other places of the documents and the information the documents contained that were sent from Korea to Taiwan.
Well,
and if that's right, then there is a legitimate ownership issue that has nothing to do with patent law and whether anybody eventually gets a patent here. I would think. And if I'm wrong, help me understand why I'm wrong. I'm just trying to understand the case.
If they had alleged that there was an ownership issue about the documents that were exchanged, I can understand that. However, the case cannot be adjudicated in its entirety unless the court is going to address the issue of the inventorship, which is the main thrust of their complaint.
Why shouldn't you make that argument to the state judge that part of the lawsuit involves things he shouldn't touch, and he can go ahead and decide the rest of the lawsuit if there is a rest?
Well, if there is a rest of the lawsuit, since they've already pled that they are entitled to have ownership of what we have claimed in our patent, I don't know how the state court is going to adjudicate that.
I agree.
For example...
A federal court couldn't adjudicate it either. It was premature.
Absolutely. But for example, I mean, in the University of Colorado case, they also dealt with the issue that they have pled in here, such as unjust enrichment. And in that case, they said, of course, unjust enrichment depends upon who is the correct inventor. But here, since these patent claims are currently pending in the United States Patent and Trademark Office, even a federal district court judge could not adjudicate inventorship. It's within the exclusive jurisdiction of the USPTO. Rather than waiting for the United States Patent and Trademark Office to decide the issue of inventorship on these pending claims, they're attempting to circumvent the USPTO and have the state court decide it.
So the state court shouldn't, but why should we presume that the state court is going to do something it shouldn't do?
Because
embedded in a lawsuit that has other things in it that look perhaps like legitimate state court claims.
On the periphery, they may have legitimate state court claims if they cut out all the patent issue, but that is not what is in their complaint. And what is the guarantee that the California state court is not going to take up these issues? And how do I get back to the federal circuit?
We're not in the business of giving out guarantees. We're in the business of trying to decide whether a remand of the total complaint was lawful or not. And you make a good point that some of the issues and some of the claims deal with patent law. That's perfectly clear. If my assumption is right that some other issues and claims go beyond patent law, then it would seem like the complaint is properly remandable and the right action by the district judge is to decide the true state issues and leave the interference issues to the patent law. Why should we presume the state judge is going to do the wrong thing?
But if one of the well-pleaded complaint, or one of the well-pleaded complaint counts in the action involves a substantial question of patent law, then that the entire case is the state court is divested of jurisdiction. It has to be in the federal court. And then the federal court would then use a supplemental jurisdiction to decide all these counts that surround this substantial question of federal patent law. That avoids the problem of having the state court in the position of possibly deciding a federal patent law issue. So the supplemental jurisdiction under Hunter Douglas should dictate here, and the whole thing should be in federal court. Now, the federal court may be in a position to say, well, I can go ahead and hear under my supplemental jurisdiction some of these other issues that revolve around some of these document questions. But since these patent law claims are still pending in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and they have the exclusive jurisdiction, then I'm in a position to stay this until something happens, or I can just dismiss it and they can file their case again when this becomes ripe.
Well, maybe the state judge could and should stay the case pending patent law decision.
Perhaps they could.
But again, you're asking us to assume the state judge is going to do the wrong thing.
Well, I'm not assuming that they're going to do the wrong thing, but the question is whether it should be in state court in the first place, since this does, as pled, involve a substantial question of federal patent law. I don't even agree with that.
As pled, it will involve, at some possible date in the future, federal patent law questions if patents are issued, but on the current state of the record, there aren't even any litigable federal patent issues. Yes, it's all premature.
It is all premature.
Well, it'd be dismissed as premature if the judge does the right thing.
But I'm not sure that that is where we want to put these issues of patent law in the state court, where the state court is possibly going to adjudicate issues of patent law that are going to be inconsistent with the federal standard. Part of the problem with
it's not going to bind the patent office or any federal district judge, no matter what state court judge might say, somehow loosely related to inventorship or validity or anything else. So what's the harm?
Well, the harm
of
number one
is the later infringement suit is going to be bound by what the state judge says in this case.
Well, if the issue is going to be that, in accordance with the remand order, that the state court, and this is what was in the remand order, that there was a recognition of a state common law right of inventorship, and that is preempted by the federal patent law under University of Colorado. You can't have a state court using a standard of inventorship that's going to be inconsistent with the federal standard. That's why it's preempted. So for it to go back down to the state court under the direction from the district court that they can apply the state common law standard of inventorship and decide the bundle of rights is going to be divided up between the two parties. They both have pending patent applications in the United States Patent and Trademark Office. It seems inappropriate for this dual track to go on, for having the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office looking at the inventorship of these claims that they obviously dispute.
Yeah, but you know, and seems, having the state court. Inappropriate is not much of a legal standard to ask the court to apply. The legal standard we have to apply is whether this district judge on this record abused his discretion in remanding this complaint to a state court judge in California. It's not within our purview to say, well, what is the way we prefer to have these kind of cases go forward? We have to apply the law the way it is. We're not making up new law based on what would be a nice, tidy, preferred arrangement. You may be right, but it's neither here nor there if it isn't unlawful.
But I don't believe that it was in his discretion to remand a case that involves a substantial question of patent law to a state court, particularly where he directs the state court in the remand order to apply a common law statute of inventorship or a common law standard of inventorship.
I read him as saying apply state common law to the ownership / inventorship issues.
But the case that he cited there from 1944 talked about a state common law right in inventorship. So if the California state court is going to apply common law inventorship that's clearly preempted by the federal patent law and would not be within his discretion to remand it to a state court under those circumstances. And if you take the second step, if they can't remand it to the state court under that standard of a common law inventorship because it's a federal question, then it has to be in federal court. He couldn't remand it to state court. And since it is a federal question, if you look at the fact that it's now pending in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the issue of the inventorship, then he can't decide inventorship either. He has to wait for the USPTO to make its decision. Then there's something right to talk about.
Well, is the
Mr. Rhodes, aren't you really arguing that the court did not distinguish between ownership versus inventorship of the invention? The deck judgment, the two deck judgment claims that were made were for the invention, the inventorship itself. And that's a federal issue, isn't it?
It is a federal issue. And
so isn't that your strongest argument? The first two claims that were made for declaratory judgment, in fact, did implicate federal law, and they would arise under our jurisdiction?
Yes, they definitely would. And if you look for the relief that they're asking for in the declaratory judgment action, they're asking the state court to decide the rights as to inventorship between CTI and HIF Bio. So under those circumstances, the federal court nor the state court has jurisdiction to decide those issues.
So it's not an issue of ownership of the patents once issued, it's an issue of the invention itself. As to who the inventors were.
Who the inventors were would decide the ownership issue. And
Substantively,
yes.
But you have to decide the inventorship first.
Right.
So on that basis, if in fact those two first claims were arising under the patent laws, what about the rest of the claims? You had 12 claims that were filed. One was a RICO claim, which the court
dismissed.
What about the others?
Well, if you look at, for example, slander of title, we're still looking at title to what? There has to be some property right, some rest that's at issue. And right now, that is not yet determined because the Patent Office hasn't passed on that issue yet.
Do those particular claims raise inventorship as a substantial issue?
Well, each one of the counts recites to the conduct that is pled. And the conduct that was pled, if you look back into the complaint, is primarily about the fact that the act of filing the patent application and submitting the declaration of ownership was the misappropriation of their invention. That is the act that they complain of. They, in their complaint, for example, they show in the tables in paragraphs 86 and 89 of their complaint the list of competing patent applications and when they were filed. Now, when HIF Bio invented this, what they did is they did two things. In 2001, they published their article.
Oh, we're familiar with the record itself.
Okay.
But trying to establish the fact that based upon the first two counts, there was federal jurisdiction.
Yes.
And the supplemental jurisdiction under 1367C would apply to the claim. Would it not if there was a substantial issue of inventorship in some of those claims?
Yes, there would be. Again, slander of title. Title to what? They're talking about the ownership of the invention. The actual and constructive fraud. Again, they're talking and referring to what they call the false statements of inventorship that were submitted to the Patent and Trademark Office. Unjust enrichment. Unjust enrichment is only going to come to be an issue once they decide the inventorship. That was actually the issue in the University of Colorado, where they had to decide who was the proper inventorship under similar circumstances was when there was the dialogue going back and forth between the people who claimed to be the inventor and the University of Colorado who claimed to be the inventor. They had to decide the inventorship issue first, and then they could decide whether or not there was unjust enrichment.
Judge Holden?
Before the patent applications were filed, this product was in existence, correct? Someone owned it. Whether it was your client or opposing counsel's client, somebody owned it, and there was an ownership right to that property.
Well, I'm not even sure if we can identify exactly what that property was.
Whatever the property was, there was an ownership that applied to, it was a right that the owner had, who then applied for a patent. You claim you're the owner, or your client claims they're the owner. And then the other side claims they're the owner. But the ownership itself actually arose before the patent application occurred.
What they're claiming as their ownership interest has never been correlated to what is actually pending in our claims in the U.S. Patent and Trademark.
No, that's not my question. My question is, didn't they own it before they applied? And aren't you claiming you own it before you applied?
What we claim as ours is what we own before we apply.
Right.
What they claimed as theirs is what they supposedly owned before they applied.
Can't that issue of ownership before the patent application was applied be determined by the state court without consideration of what is occurring in the patent office?
I wish it could, but the way it is pled in their complaint.
Well,
they are saying that what we have claimed in our patent belongs to them.
Well, actually, what they're claiming in the first two counts, which is Judge Garrison, what I was talking about, is the first count talks about ownership. They call the item the invention.
Right.
And that's how they just refer to it. They don't call it the patented invention. They just call it the invention. And then they refer to ownership in the first count, and they refer to the inventorship in the second count, which actually occurred at the time of ownership, because the inventor becomes the owner before there's any application of that. And it seems to me, can't those issues be resolved by the state court?
The problem I see is that if the state court is going to be put in the position of trying to decide ownership, the state court
without consideration of patent applications, because they don't say anything about patent applications in either of those counts. And of course, you can plead the alternative.
Well, they don't say specifically the patent applications, the analytics counts. It refers to the conduct that was pled, but in those counts, they're talking about the public and adverse claims that we have made to what they consider to be their invention.
Right.
And that claim is what was claimed in our pending patent application when we filed it, because what they say is false is that the declarations of inventorship that we submitted. So there's no doubt that...
Well, those were your false statements that they're claiming, but there's no need to have a determination of patent law, because what the false statements are about is who owned it before it was applied, the patent was applied for. Isn't that the issue?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think it's because when we filed our patent applications, they're alleging that we are claiming what they own. So, as a necessity, the California State Court would have to look at what is being claimed in our patent application and decide whether or not we're the true inventors.
But isn't that, that's not a substantial question.
It is.
Since they're claiming that what you said was what they owned before they applied for the patent. Because you applied first, right? Your client applied first.
Well, we applied first in the United States, and they got an issued or published Korean patent in Korea.
Right, but certainly that doesn't arise under the United States patent.
Well, certainly the Korean patent application does not. But when you talk about whether or not inventorship is a substantial question of federal patent law, the Hunter Douglas case that's referred to in our briefs specifically says that inventorship is a substantial question of patent law.
Inventorship of a patent.
Which is what they're talking about.
Well, maybe. They claim in the complaint that they're talking about what they invented before they applied for a patent in Korea for a few.
Unfortunately, the way they pled it is that they say that the patent application that we filed belongs to them. And so what they want to do is they want...
Well, it's what's claimed. It's the invention. It's claimed within the patent.
Yes, it is the invention that is claimed.
They're saying we invented X, and then later, the other side came along and filed a patent application that also claimed X or part of X.
Which is a classic interference type of question.
Well, it may become an interference question if interference is declared, but that doesn't mean it doesn't already exist in legal contemplation as a state law issue, much as Judge Holderman suggested.
Again, if we're going to be putting the state court in charge of deciding the inventorship of what we are claiming in our patent claim,
well, obviously they're not. There's no way that the state judge can rule on your patent application. The state judge isn't confused about that. We're not confused about that. Nobody can be confused about that. The allowability of the pending application will be decided by the patent office and only by the patent office, and nothing the state judge can or may say will change what the patent office does.
Unless the state court decides that there is something to their complaint and they're going to enjoin us from pursuing our patent application in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office based upon this bundle of rights that the state court has decided under a state common law theory of inventorship.
Well, again, you're in effect asking us to assume the state judge is going to do something that would be ludicrous on its face.
There's no request for that relief, is there, by the other side?
Injunctive relief, yes.
Enjoining you from...
They are asking to enjoin us from the conduct that they say is inconsistent with their claim to their invention, without ever correlating this claim to what we're actually claiming in our pending patent application.
Can you be more precise in answering Judge Holmes' question? Does their injunctive relief request say that you have to drop your prosecution of your pending patent application?
No, it's much broader than that. And that's part of the problem with this complaint.
Why isn't part of the solution? Because if the injunctive request contemplates, at least in part, conduct that has nothing to do with what you would otherwise do in communication with the patent office, then how is it interfering with the patent office's exclusive control of the proceeding before it?
If the state court makes a decision that is somehow going to put us in contempt of some sort of injunction order if we continue to prosecute our patent application because they have made some determination that we're not entitled to do that, then I don't know how we ever get back to the federal circuit. I mean, once the state court is involved in deciding issues of federal patent law, this is my one chance to get here and say, we need to look at this and decide whether or not this is an appropriate remand or not. If it's not,
could the state court provide relief to the extent that they could force you to assign that patent application to the other side?
That is a possible form of relief that the state court could give. They could decide that what we're claiming in our patent application belongs to them, and under the theories that they have put forth in their complaint, have the state court force us to assign that application to HIF Bio.
But in doing so, would the state court have to determine who invented the particular claim of invention at that point?
Yes, there's no way around the state court looking at the inventorship issue. He has to look at what we are claiming in our pending patent application. He's going to have to make a determination as to whether or not we are the true inventors or not, or whether they should be added to our application.
So that raises your issue of federal question, doesn't it?
It does raise a question, federal question. I mean, if HIF Bio wants a state court to fashion a remedy modifying the inventorship of our pending patent applications based on state law, that's definitely preempted. If HIF Bio wants a state court to fashion a remedy modifying the inventorship of our pending patent application based on federal law, that's definitely a federal question, and the state court lacks jurisdiction. The federal court.
Wait. Before you blow by that, the state courts don't necessarily lack jurisdiction to decide patent issues in the context of legitimate state claims. We have this all the time where a contract, a licensing agreement, litigating the state court, and en route to litigating whether there are contract breach damages due, they decide issues of infringement, enforceability, and validity, the three prime issues. Now, according to your argument, they can't do that because those are federal patent issues exclusively for federal courts. But we know from the case law that that's not so. They're legitimate state court issues in the context of a state contract breach claim.
But there's no contract here, number one.
Well, they're saying there's an implied contract. Now, that may be baloney, it may be without merit, it may be rejected by the state court. But if there were an implied contract, how is it any different from the regular state court contract license breach case?
The contract has no correlation to what we're claiming as our invention in our pending patent application.
Now, how can we assess that? You say it, but they say the opposite.
Well, they do say the opposite, but
how can we evaluate that?
When we're talking about inventorship, this is something that specifically the court said in the University of Colorado, there is no room for a state court to assert a separate standard of inventorship from the federal patent law. And secondly, under Hunter Douglas, the court says that this issue of inventorship is a substantial matter of federal patent law, and therefore it belongs in the federal court. And we have to divest the state court of jurisdiction over this issue.
Yeah, but in those cases, there were patent claims. In this case, we don't have patent
and
claims.
That's true, and that's part of the problem.
Well, that makes a big difference. Hunter Douglas or the Colorado University of Colorado case have any application. They seem totally distinguishable because there were concrete claims. And the inventorship of concrete claims definitely is a federal patent law issue, I would say. But where you don't yet have claims, and you're talking about an unclaimed invention, You don't have the same problem of intruding on federal space.
It's actually even worse, because the property right is yet to be determined, because there are competing patent applications in the Patent and Trademark Office. And until the USPTO passes on the inventorship of those competing patent claims and determines who is the appropriate inventor, there is no identifiable property right that's at dispute here. How is the state court going to decide any of these issues of unjust enrichment, slander of title, etc., until the patent office has a chance to do its job? Then a federal court can look at this.
That's an argument for the state court judge to stay reaching the merits. I don't see how it's an argument that it's impermissible for the federal judge to send the case back to the state judge. Good argument, but making it in the wrong form. Using it as an argument to be made to the state judge. Look, how are you harmed? If the state judge does something totally whacked out, and you're denied a patent, you're going to appeal, and you will be back here. You're not being locked out of federal court by the remand order in dispute today. If your patent is denied, your patent application is denied, you'll be back in here by the board or by the district court, and you'll end up back in the federal circuit. So it's not correct to say that this is your one chance to preserve the federal aspect of this case. This is not an accurate thing.
It doesn't seem that way to me, Your Honor, because for the federal district court judge to remand a case to state court to apply a state common law inventorship standard just is preempted by the federal statute. And it would be an abuse of discretion to send it back under that standard to have the state court proceed. He's actually told the state court he could proceed under a state common law inventorship standard. So, in view of that, it was an abuse of discretion to remand this case to the state court when the issue here is going to require the determination of inventorship, and while it's pending in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
But there's inventorship, and then there's inventorship. There's inventorship as to an unclaimed, unpatented, alleged invention, which could be a matter of contract. You and I can work on something jointly. We could make an invention, and before there's any patent application, we could have a contract between the two of us as to who's going to own any downstream rights if they mature. And there's no question the state court could adjudicate that contract case. And they could say, no, it's not correct, Michelle, as you're claiming, that you and Rhodes mutually agreed that you would be the owner and Rhodes wouldn't. Contract case. They've decided under ordinary contract law. What's the problem?
If this had been a contract case, I would agree with
you. They're saying it is a contract case.
But that's not what they pled.
Baloney that they're saying that. I don't know. But they're asserting implied contract rights.
As one count. But
count is part of the lawsuit. I mean, you can't win by saying the crux is something else. If there's a legitimate state case somewhere in here, I don't see how you can show an abuse of discretion by saying, yeah, but there's some other things in here that may not be a legitimate state case.
It only takes one count that raises a substantial federal question for the federal court to have to decide this issue.
But the patent law has to go up. The patent law has to be an essential element of that count.
Yes.
If general law can resolve that count, then there is no jurisdiction.
Had they not pled that we had submitted a false claim of inventorship in connection with our patent applications, they might have a point. But they put that at issue directly in this case.
All right, we've given you 23 extra minutes in order to try to explore this. Clearly, I think we better hear from the other side. We'll restore your requested rebuttal time, Mr. Rhodes, so you'll have the 5 minutes on the vote. Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Selectman, Your Honor.
Good morning. Welcome to you. Please proceed. We've read the briefs. We know the record. You have some idea. We may have some sense of the issues here. So So what would help us most is if you would respond to the points that Mr. Rhodes has just made. No need to repeat the brief. We've got the brief. We read it. Don't need to summarize it. Just respond to what Mr. Rhodes has asserted.
Sure. I think the issue here is the definition of the invention as used in the complaint and as Mr. Rhodes wants it to mean. I think the bench is absolutely correct that the invention as we have defined in the complaint and as the plaintiff have adopted really refers to something a lot more than the specific claims that are in front of the U.S.
His last point is that the requested relief is that the subject matter of his pending claims, now pending in the Patent Office, your complaint asserts belong to your client.
We're not really referencing to the patent application. We're talking about a bundle of rights associated with this basic idea that YC1 is an effective anti-cancer drug.
I need you to respond to the question.
Sure.
It's true that in some parts of your complaint, you talk about the invention in an abstract, non-patent sort of way. But he makes the point that elsewhere in your complaint, you request that the subject matter of his pending claim be declared to be your property. Does it or doesn't?
We couldn't possibly do that because we don't know what the claims in his patent application will ultimately be. What we are asking is, of course, determination that this bundle of rights associated with a notion that a conception of this of the YC1 as an anti-cancer drug be declared as ours. And the bundle of rights is really not in abstract. It includes pre-publication.
Look, we're only talking about what's in the complaint.
Yes, Your Honor.
We're not talking about what exists up in the air somewhere.
Yes,
he
sir.
Says it's right in the complaint that you claim ownership of his pending application claims.
That's not correct.
Well, what is it that you do claim? And show us the text.
We are claiming that there is invention that we have conceived, and we're not using the invention in a patent sense, Your Honor. It's a notion that YC1 has any...
But the part of your complaint where you ask for relief to be declared the owner of the subject matter of his pending claim.
That's not correct, Your Honor. We're asking to be declared the owner of the invention that we have specifically defined as this very general conception. And at one point in his brief, Mr. Rose states that this invention could never be patentable because it's so broad. And he's absolutely correct, because the invention, as we use the term in the complaint, in the plea, is not a patentable subject matter per se. What we are saying is there's this, the invention here is the novel idea that there are effective anti-cancer uses for YC1 and pre-publication data and business analysis and marketing analysis that were all confidential, proprietary, and valuable, which would not otherwise be available to the defendants, which were, in fact, released to him pursuant to an implied agreement. So
now you have me lost. On the one hand, you're saying that your entire invention for your complaint is the abstract idea that this substance might have anti-cancer therapeutic properties, period. And then on the other hand, you're saying that what your complaint deals with are all these other documents that Dr. Park sent to Taiwan. It seems like it can't be both. If the subject of your lawsuit is an abstract concept, which you're calling an invention, it can't also be all that detailed data that was sent over in the documents.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the key concept here is what is this thing that's being taken from us, from the plaintiffs? In this case, the thing is the bundle of valuable information that's associated with the notion or discovery that YC1 is an effective anti-cancer drug. Now, some of that information is very valuable and could be used to for the preparation and filing of the patent application.
I'm still not with you. Either the invention is all the data you documented, or the invention is simply, statable in one sentence, the idea that this compound can fight cancer.
It's, as we defined it in the
complaint. Which is?
Yes, Your Honor. It's the former, as we have used it in the email.
And it's not any of the documents.
Well, aspects of the invention are really disclosed in the documents or in pre-publication data, as we refer to the session.
Well, you have me totally mystified. I can't follow you. Either the invention is a simple idea, or it's hundreds of pages of details in a whole lot of different documents that were sent to Taiwan. It seems like it can't be both, and it seems like you need to make up your mind which it is.
Yes, sir. The invention, as we define it in the complaint, is the broad idea. But what we are alleging to have been taken from us, from the plaintiffs, is more than just the invention. It's the invention plus all these valuable pre-publication data and experimental information and research protocol, for instance, which have been released to the defendants. So I don't think there's really a confusion. I mean, we are specifically defining the term invention for the purposes of pleading it, but what we are alleging to have been taken from us is a lot more than that. It incorporates, it also incorporates these other tangible proprietary business information that was released to defendants pursuant to an implied agreement, as you put it.
Aren't you also seeking in your complaint some determination about the falsehood of their application?
No, and we agree that this would not be the proper procedure for accomplishing that end, and this would not be the proper procedure for determining the inventorship, for instance, of the specific invention that's claimed in the patent application. In fact, this lawsuit was
filed. But then how is there any false statement that you attribute to them other than the statement that they made to the patent office that they are the owners of the subject matter of their pending application?
Well, again, I mean, I'm going outside the pleadings a bit, but they have represented to the US FDA, for instance, that they own and they were the originators of.
Well, don't go outside the complaint because we're bound by the complaint.
Yes,
you can't escape from anything that's in it, and he can't either.
Right.
That's all that we have before us, is this complaint.
Yes,
as phrased, remandable, yes or no. That's all that's before us.
We have alleged in the complaint that the defendants have informed the FDA that they, in fact, were the inventors and they own the anti-cancer applications of
the I think you misspoke. You meant informed the PTO.
The FDA.
Oh, the FDA, that's also in here?
Yes, sir.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
How do you really amplify on the issue of Section 89 of the complaint, where you allege that it's the discovery of the invention, the invention's capital, that's on A272, and naming particular inventors as discoverers in the invention while omitting Parks and Chung. Is that really a question of inventorship that you're raising at that point in time? What is that statement in the complaint? And then you analyze the defendant's patent applications, your patent applications. What is the allegation there?
The allegation is that the defendants have told not only the USPTO, but the rest of the world that they are, in fact, the originators of this.
The inventorship is an issue.
The inventorship of what was taken.
No, the inventorship is an issue. Is it? What is an issue then? When you allege the inventors were not properly named, pursuant to allegation number 89.
It's an inventorship of what was taken from us, Your Honor. We are not
of the invention.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the question is whether or not the proper inventors were named and who the inventors are.
That is an issue.
So it's a question of inventorship.
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that a federal question under the patent laws?
It is not a federal question because the issue of inventorship in this context really arises in the state law, Your Honor.
I'm saying under the allegations made in your complaint, number 89.
In other words, is it a necessary element of the cause of action you plead in paragraph 89 to resolve inventorship of the subject matter of the pending applications?
No, Your Honor, because we're not really claiming, we're not really petitioning the court or anybody else for a correction of the inventorship or determination of who invented, who owns the.
Well, that's the question, you say you're not, but Judge Gallarza's questions imply, and I worry that maybe you are, even though you don't say so explicitly.
Well, if you're not asking the court for that determination, in this case the state court judge, then we will not get that relief, Your Honor. think it's very simple.
Well, yeah, but what we're trying to clarify is what are you, in effect, asking the state court to rule? And I take it that Judge Byers' question, certainly would be my question, is aren't you, among other things, many other things, but aren't you, among other things, asking the state court to declare that you own the subject matter of the co-pending application?
Well, we can't tell because we don't know what the remaining claims on the defendant's patent application of Baltimore would be. What we are asking for is a determination of who invented or who conceived this notion, this invention, the general notion that YC1 has anti-cancer properties, or we claim to be a valuable novel idea. And ultimately, some aspects of that might be patentable. Ultimately, a patent might issue on behalf, for the benefit of the defendants, where the claim might go to somebody.
But if you are declared the owner of the very idea, then don't you automatically become the owner of any little subpart that might end up in an issued claim?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. In fact, it's sort of...
Well, I don't understand that. If you say, I own the whole state of Illinois, and then the question comes up, who owns Chicago, that's already been resolved. He who owns the state of Illinois also owns Chicago. It's a lesser included part. So if he grants the relief you asked for in paragraph 89, maybe he is indirectly precluding any different answer by the patent office.
Well, the fact that I'm declared the owner, or my client is declared the owner of a general idea, doesn't mean that he'll necessarily be declared to be the owner of a future potential patents that issue, which might refer to that general idea. The patent that ultimately issues, we admit that the patents that ultimately might issue out of this general broad idea would be much narrower. I mean, the notion that YC1 is an anti-cancer drug, a general concept, would not be patentable.
And but if some aspect or application of it is patentable, and you're the sole originator of the very idea, then how could anybody else end up owning a patent for some specific application of that general idea?
The claims that might issue down the road could be narrow enough so that the general concept might not be deemed to be enabling for us. I think there could potentially be scenarios where Youngshin might end up receiving a patent on a narrower claim that's derived or perhaps uses the experimental data that they received from the plaintiffs in connection with this general concept or general invention. That's a possibility, Your Honor. But I don't think the plaintiffs are certainly not making the claim that a determination of ownership of this general idea, general invention, is defined in the complaint, will determine the ownership of the patent claim.
Is there any precedent you can cite whereby so general an idea has been resolved by a state court as to ownership / inventorship?
Well, there's a long-standing line of California cases that deal with laws of ideas, most of them based on the rights and duties and obligations arising out of implied contracts.
That's not my question. My question is whether there's any state law case where state law jurisdiction was recognized where the subject matter as to which you assert rights of ownership and inventorship is so vague and abstract and broad as in this case?
I would not be able to cite a specific California state law case that deals with
pharmacy. Any state, any federal court, is there any precedent?
Well, there is.
Where a state court has been allowed to decide inventorship and ownership of an alleged invention of this huge breadth.
Well, under California law, a general idea of a movie or a storyline or even a show would be protectable under the theory of implied contracts. I mean, again, it does not...
I'm talking about utility patents. Come on, let's not talk about copyrights for movies or something. Is there any precedent where an invention that would arguably be eligible for protection by an issuance of a utility patent was decided by state court where the claim was to this broad of an idea?
I'm unable to cite to a state law case dealing with pharmaceutical inventions, but again, I believe that California cases dealing with protection of ideas is applicable to this dispute, in the sense that if under California law, in the theory of implied contract, can protect a general notion, it's a general notion that might not even be protectable by under copyright law, for instance, then it surely should, the same law should be applicable, case law should be applicable to protect the general idea of this chemical product as anti-cancer usage. And I'd like to remind the court that we're not, the thing that was taken is not limited to this general idea. There are very concrete pre-publication research data, very concrete business and marketing analysis and analytical materials, proprietary and confidential information which are released to the defendants pursuant to understanding between the parties. So, yes, we're the thing that was taken from the plaintiffs goes beyond this general concept of a general idea. And again, as I noted, under California law, even a general idea or a very broad idea that might not be susceptible to copyright.
I'm going to repeat that. You said it at least three times in the last 90 seconds. Let me ask you this. Suppose the state judge adjudicates the merits of this case based on the remand, assume this set of evidence, and he orders that if any patent is issued to Mr. Rhodes' client, that Mr. Rhodes' client must assign ownership rights in that patent to your client. Now, assume that that series of events happened. Now, why wouldn't that constitute a state court overruling the inventorship determination in an interference by the patent office?
Because the inventorship in that case really refers to the issue of ownership. Who owns the invention?
You're not answering the question. In that hypothetical, wouldn't the state judge applying state law have effectively overruled the interference decision of the patent office, which is going to say he's the prior inventor, it is patentable, he gets his claims as a result of this interference, but meanwhile the state judge says, well, he gets them, but only for one nanosecond, because I, the state judge, have declared that the true owner of his application claim is your client.
Your Honor, I believe that issue of inventorship and ownership can be adjudicated by the state court judge. The problem here is that this hypothetical interference might never happen, and the real issue is, should everything be put on hold until the patent office allows the application run through its course, when this hypothetical interference proceeding might never happen? No claim might be issued to Mr. Rhodes.
If no claim might be issued, why isn't that more reason to not have a state court lawsuit rather than to now have a state court lawsuit, as you're suggesting?
Because the injury to the plaintiffs today, right now, is very much concrete. And in this case, the saying that justice delayed is just denied is absolutely true. Yangxin is a very large Taiwanese pharmaceutical company. HIF Bio is a startup entity. Without having colorful rights to a core intellectual property portfolio, HIF Bio will not survive. It simply cannot afford to wait 2, 3, 4 years for the interference proceeding or the application or the prosecution of these varying patents to run its course. It would be dead by that. And that's a simple reality. And there's nothing in the case law that requires the state court judge from acting immediately to protect the state law-based rights.
What about the federal rights that would be involved? Also, the intertwining.
The federal
that you have alleged, the rightful inventors, in your complaint, you're alleging inventorship. So isn't that really a challenge once again to the inventorship? Is the common law requirement of inventorship was cited in the 1944 case, which was a federal district court case? Is there such a provision under California law to determine inventorship of a particular claimed invention?
Well, to the extent that inventorship and ownership are intertwined and the state law judge.
No, forgetting about ownership, let's talk about inventorship. Is there a provision under California law to determine inventorship?
Yes, Your Honor.
On a particular claim?
Yes, Your Honor. There's California law that states that the person who conceives of an invention is the owner.
Talking about common law or statutory?
Common law, Your Honor.
Common
law? Yes.
And that has not been superseded by the federal patent law?
We do not believe that it has. And in fact, one of the things that we do refer to the inventorship and ownership of this general concept of invention and the associated proprietary business information, but obviously we're not seeking the patent office to do anything.
But you're trying to ascertain the rightful inventors in your complaint. You're alleging the rightful inventors have not filed the proper patent application.
That's an allegation that we make, but we are not, the remedy that we are seeking is not a correction. It has nothing to do with anything pending before the appeal.
But your allegation has to be supported. And the relief that you're asking for is a determination of inventorship.
Determination of inventorship of the things which were taken from the plaintiff, Your Honor. Correct.
Of the invention.
Of the invention, yes, Your Honor.
Why shouldn't your complaint be construed as simply an attempt to preempt the patent office interference proceeding that could occur?
Because you're not really seeking any objective relief that has anything to do with what's occurring at the U.S. Patent Office.
Well, to the extent that the subject matter overlaps, you are. If the subject matter is totally different, you would be correct. But let's assume that the subject matter is either identical or overlapping with the subject matter of the two pending, potentially interfering patent applications. In that event, why shouldn't your suit be construed as an attempt to preempt the patent law decision from being made by the Patent and Trademark Office?
Well, that's in fact what happens every time the state court judge rules on an issue of ownership, for instance, or contract rights. In fact, the established case law indicates that even the state law judge is entitled to even rule on issues relating to validity as long as that issue is ancillary to a state law cause of action. So the fact that the inventorship of some of the things that the defendants are claiming their own patent applications might be involved is not sufficient to create federal law question.
Why not?
Because it's only an issue, again, that's ancillary to the resolution of a state law cause of action.
The real question here is whether you should be permitted by a district judge in the context of remand proceedings to determine ownership and inventorship of subject matter that appears to be the same subject matter that's pending in front of the patent office.
Which in fact might or might not, depending on how the prosecution of the defendant's application turns out, all the claims might be refused or denied.
Of course, both applications might be denied. Maybe the invention is claimed in both applications would be found to be obvious and no one would get a patent. But obviously, everybody's concerned about if there is a patent, who's going to own it? And you want the state judge to say, we own it.
Correct.
Mr. Rhodes wants the patent office, in the interference context that may arise, no interference yet, there may be an interference, to carry out this function because that's the normal way it's done.
I think putting the cart before the horse.
He would say the opposite. He'd say, you know, it doesn't help us.
He'd define the cart.
Yeah.
I think some of the case law that supports our position was AT&T versus Integrated Network Corporation, which is cited in the briefs. There's a more recent case, Europlasty versus Advanced Euroscience, 239 F3D 1277, again, which makes the same point that you can have misappropriation of trade secrets or breach of contract, breach of fiduciary duty, claims based on violations of state law that implicates pending patent applications or issued patents, that which nonetheless does not raise a federal law question. And I believe that our situation is analogous to the facts of those cases.
But if they prove that they're the rightful inventors, then what about those state law claims?
I think the key is that they're rightful inventors of what? I mean, if the plaintiffs would be adjudicating before the state court judge who owns this invention, but whether that invention is really what's being patented or will be patented or patentable are two separate issues. And to put the state law proceedings on hold when there's real injury to the plaintiffs and when the issues involved and the facts involved and the evidence involved and the legal theories involved are truly based on state law.
Well, that would not be put on hold because the federal court could also try those on a supplemental jurisdiction basis under 1367. So that would not be put on hold. It would be tried as part of the inventorship issue, which in fact would be the federal question of issue and underlies most of the other claims.
Again, the decision to remand, I think it's at full discretion of the trial judge, and we do not believe that he abuses his discretion by remanding the case to the state court. When there is clearly established case law that says that state law judges are fully entitled to decide on issues of federal patent law as long as the court claims are really based on state law claims. One final point is that Mr. Rhodes does make reference to the fact that the California Uniform Trade Secrets Act, and there might be a preemptive effect of that statute on the remaining state law causes of action. I think your Honor's prior comment is correct that it's the issue here is not the merits of the allegations that were claims set forth in the complaint of the remand order issued by the trial judge, but nonetheless, I'd like to point out that there are exceptions. The California Uniform Trade Secret Act expressly provides for exemptions on state law claims based on contract remedies, including like contracts of breach of fiduciary duty. It would not be preempted effect.
Isn't the risk of an inconsistent state court judgment one of the factors we're supposed to look at in deciding the remandability of claims in a context like this?
It would be, but I think we're really talking about apples and oranges, Your Honor, because the
if that is one of the tests of remandability, then we should next ask, is there a risk here that a future state court decision by the judge in Los Angeles will be inconsistent with a future decision of the patent office in an interference? And it looks to me like there is such a risk, because the state court judge might say that the subject matter of the pending application is owned by your client, not by anybody else. The patent office, perhaps, would resolve the inventorship dispute by saying that, no, the subject matter in common of the two pending applications is owned by Mr. Rhodes' client. It would be a direct clash. The state judgment would say, you own it, and the federal patent office judgment would say, Rhodes' clients own it. Totally inconsistent judgment.
But
if there's a risk of that, why should we allow a remand?
But the state law judge is not being asked to rule specifically on that issue. In fact,
who cares about specifically versus implicitly? The practical effect would be that the state judgment would say, you own it, the patent office ruling would say, he owns it. Irreconcilably in conflict.
But the issue is, you own what? The state court judge is sitting and determining who owns this, the concept of invention under state law, this broad concept.
You're changing my hypothetical. The hypothetical was, if the state court judgment concerned the subject matter that overlaps the subject matter of the co-pending applications.
If it's the exact subject matter?
Overlap.
I think that's an issue for that would militate against having the state court judge rule on it. But again, the case law states that the state law judges are not barred. In fact, I mean, the concern...
We know the case law. It's not disputed. Mr. Rhodes agrees. We all agree that in a typical contract case, there's no problem with patent issues being decided by state court judges in a legitimate state court case, like when there's a written contract. No dispute. But this case may be quite different. Because in this case, there's a significant risk, I surmise, in totally inconsistent judgments of the state and federal court.
Now, you disagree. You say, well, speculative, or wouldn't happen, or unlikely, don't worry about it, we don't know yet.
But it's a little ironic if a state judge can decide this issue now, because it appears that the federal judge, if he retained jurisdiction, could not decide this issue now.
Well, I mean, the state court judge is being asked, again, I'm not trying to change my hypothetical, but the reality is that the state court judge is being asked to rule on an issue that's much broader and actually different from the patentable subject matter. So there might be an overlap in the issues.
Do you agree that the federal judge, if he retained jurisdiction, could not or should not decide inventorship with respect to the co-pending application?
I believe that's correct, and he could not just possibly do so, because he's
and,
not...
And could he do so indirectly by defining an invention and then saying, your client owns it, or conversely, his client owns it?
But the same effect, same result would come about when every time the judge, the state law judge, rules an issue of ownership. One of the elements of patentability is that you have the owner who's prosecuting the application. Well, what happens if the state law judge rules on the ownership? Could that give rise to inconsistent results? Yes, that's a possibility as well, but that does not prevent the state law judge from deciding on the issue.
I don't understand what your answer is to my basic question, which is whether the federal judge, if you retain jurisdiction, could or should decide the inventorship issue with respect to the co-pending application.
The issues that he would be asked to be the issues that he would be asked to be adjudicating would not be any different from the same issues that the state court is being asked to adjudicate, which is the theft of the confidential information, pre-publication data, the invention is redefined with a conception of YC1, the use of YC1 as an anti-cancer drug, none of which overlap exactly with the subject matter of
overlap exactly.
It's not the same patentable subject matter, Your Honor. That's the point.
Well, how do we know that? You say it. You say it isn't. He says it is. How are we supposed to decide? Flip a coin?
Well, the invention we defined it is the idea that YC1 has anti-angiogenic, anti-cancer effects. I think Mr. Rhodes agrees that the general idea is not really patentable. It's not enabling and it's not patentable. However, nonetheless, somebody can be the owner or originator of such an idea. That's what we're trying to determine.
I didn't further.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Mr. Rhodes, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Rose, I attributed to you a comment about how you would define the cart, how you would define the horse. If you want to explain that, that'd be fine. If not, I'll forget that. I even said it.
Well, I'm not sure how to address carts and horses in this situation.
That's fine. Thank you.
However, it was interesting, one comment that was made. And that is that they have no idea what is being claimed in our pending patent application. Nevertheless, as pled, They're alleging that we falsely claimed to be the inventor of, quote, their invention. The other thing that I was thinking about during that response was, if this was in the federal court and the federal judge was deciding this issue, and he was faced with this issue of co-pending patent applications and pending claims of both parties, and whether or not he would have jurisdiction to decide the inventorship of those issues. And if under the case law he says, no, I don't, because the patent office has exclusive jurisdiction to decide the issue of inventorship of pending patent claims, can he then go forward with the other counts and make decisions as to those counts? For example, what happens to his ability to adjudicate slander of title? Isn't he going to have to go back and say, I can't decide that right now because I don't have jurisdiction to figure out who owns what in terms of the patent claims. I have to wait for the patent office to pass on that. And then I might have a property right that I can address. There's no concrete property right here that's at issue. Yet they say that we falsely claimed to be the inventors of their subject matter when they admit that they have no knowledge of what is pending in our claims. The other item is, of course, the continued representation that a state court could somehow appropriately address inventorship issues. And that may be something that could be done if this was in the context of someone fighting over an assignment issue, that they're the owner of an assignment to a patent. But that's not the context that this is in. This is an absolute allegation as referenced, for example, in paragraph 89 of the complaint, where they say that we continue to prepare and prosecute patent applications purporting to disclose the invention and naming Lee and Tung as the inventors discoverers while omitting Park and Chun, and submitting this information to the USPTO by the US mail that falsely identify Lee and Tung as inventors. But as we all know, the inventorship issue depends on what is exactly being claimed in the patent application.
Can I just ask about that? Wasn't that really a part of their allegation under the RICO count that was dismissed? It was your using the United States mails as a predicate act, and the judge actually threw that part out?
Well, he did throw that part out. But there are other parts of the pleading that make the same allegations that are not part of the RICO count. And I tagged that one as one that was easy for me to reference.
The reason I raised it with
right.
The unit is because they really, the other side, their allegations, were really using that as a use of the United States mails. And
right.
Not necessarily saying, oh, it's patent applications.
I guess the easy way to address that is, for example, we can reference their pleading under declaratory judgment for ownership, inventorship, slander, title. They reference not only those acts that are outside of the RICO count, they reference all the conduct of all the paragraphs leading up to it. So I think it's directly relevant to their allegations, and I probably shouldn't take the time to go through here and pull out other examples. The other item, of course, that I was referring to earlier was this whole idea of whether or not it's correct that in this context, they can really go forward in a state court and have the state court decide the issue of inventorship. And I'd just like to refer again to the University of Colorado Foundation, which says that the field of federal patent law preempts any state law that purports to define rights based on inventorship. An independent inventorship standard under state law would likely have different requirements and give rise to different remedies than federal patent law. A different state inventorship standard might grant property rights to an individual who would not qualify as an inventor under federal patent law, or give greater rights. And I think that gets back to Chief Judge Michelle's comment that if the state court decides that they own Illinois, are we now going to be precluded from saying that we have some rights in Chicago? So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. And unless you have any further questions, I probably should conclude this now.
I thank you both. We'll take the case under advisement.